Good morning. You are tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, those who work in juvenile justice say a decline in admissions during the COVID-19 pandemic could mark a turning point for reform. We'll have more coming up after headlines. After that, we'll hear about the physiology of ageing and research being done locally on that particular topic. After the comment line, it is back to the BBC for headlines, and then it's time for science. And today on How on Earth, it is the annual graduation special. KGNU's Jill Parker visits with some doctoral students to find out what research they have been doing at CU Boulder. At 9 o'clock, it is Alan Watts running out this morning's news and public affairs before Fergus kicks us off for a great morning of music on the Morning Sound Alternative beginning at 9:30. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Beginning on May 9th, every person older than 12 years of age will be required to wear a face covering in Boulder County. The public order stays in effect until Tuesday, May 26th, and it includes some exemptions, including people working alone in an office, anyone whose health would be negatively impacted by wearing a face covering, and children aged 12 years and younger. Denver Mayor Michael Hancock has also announced that residents of Denver will also have to wear facial coverings in public, and that is starting tomorrow, Wednesday, May 6th. This is part of the city slowly relaxing restrictions that have been in place for over a month. On Monday, it was announced that Mayor Michael Hancock will not extend the stay-at-home order for the city. That is due to expire on Friday. Residents and employees in Denver will be required now, starting on Wednesday, to wear face coverings while inside of or waiting in line to enter certain businesses, facilities or locations. These include any retail or commercial business, at a bus stop or at any facility offering healthcare services. Other parts of Colorado without local extensions to the stay-at-home order began into the next step of the safer at home phase on Monday. Starting yesterday, some offices reopened at 50% reduced in-person staffing, and some childcare facilities were also allowed to reopen if they were following best practices. The Colorado legislature will not hear a bill this session that would have provided a type of a public option health insurance program in the state. The sponsors of the measure announced on Monday in an op-ed in the Denver Post that they were withdrawing the bill because of the coronavirus pandemic. The move to withdraw the bill comes at a time when tens of thousands of Coloradoans have lost health insurance due to the COVID-19 pandemic. It also comes just days after another bill was withdrawn by Democrats. That's the paid family leave bill. That was also withdrawn at a time when tens of thousands of workers in the state are grappling with little to no paid sick leave amidst the pandemic. In the op-ed that was published in the Denver Post on Monday, the sponsors of the bill that would have brought forward a Colorado healthcare option said that their decision to withdraw the measure during the pandemic is, quote, an unwelcome coincidence that saw the very people struggling to afford healthcare be the first ones hit by a life-threatening healthcare pandemic, end quote. The Colorado Supreme Court ruled on Monday that Michelle Fregnaux Warren won't appear on the state's Democratic primary ballot in the Senate race. This is because not enough valid petition signatures were gathered. Colorado Politics reports that Warren is an immigrant rights activist, and she had told the paper at the start of her campaign that she wants to raise the profile of those issues. Yesterday's ruling reverses a decision made on April 21st by a Denver District Court judge. That judge determined that Warren had collected a sufficient number of signatures given difficulties that her campaign encountered amidst the early weeks of the coronavirus outbreak. The Colorado Attorney General's office has cited three businesses in Colorado for selling COVID-19 tests that are not approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. The Times Call reports that two of the businesses are in Boulder and Fort Collins. Cease and desist letters were sent to Red Tail Wellness in Boulder and the Functional Medicine Center in Fort Collins. They had been selling COVID-19 antibody tests that were not approved by federal regulators. They are also accused of overstating the effectiveness of the tests. According to a statement made by the Colorado Attorney General, Phil Weiser, it is a violation of the Colorado Consumer Protection Act to falsely claim that the tests were FDA approved or to withhold details about the known limitations of the tests. According to the Colorado Attorney General, the misrepresentations can endanger individuals and public health, as well as lead consumers to pay for non-existent beliefs. In the weather today, expect breezy conditions again around the Front Range, but sunny skies in the forecast, highs in the low 70s. Similar temperatures tomorrow. It looks like the wind will be dying down for Wednesday. Highs again tomorrow in the low 70s, but the wind will be back for Thursday and potentially Friday. Temperatures dropping into the mid to low 60s for Thursday and Friday. It is 10 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU. Juvenile justice advocates hope that a trend that has emerged during the coronavirus pandemic might be permanent and not just temporary. KGNU's Ros Brown says that a new survey shows there's been a dramatic drop in the number of young people in juvenile detention during the current crisis.
As the coronavirus pandemic took hold in the U.S. during the month of March, the number of young people in secure detention centers in their local communities fell by 24%, according to the Annie E. Casey Foundation survey. The survey was only conducted in 30 states, but Nate Ballas with the foundation says the decline was as large as the national decrease between 2010 and 2017.
Maybe we are finally really right-sizing juvenile detention. In this country, we could emerge from the pandemic with a detention population that truly is young people who pose an immediate community safety risk, rather than all kinds of young people who are not a risk to public safety.
Juvenile justice advocates say children should be detained only as a last resort, in extreme circumstances, and for the shortest period of time possible. But due to a lack of resources in some states, Ballas says that's not what happens.
Many young people are held in secure detention because they've broken rules of probation, because they've committed a minor offense in the community, because they've been arrested at school. And so all of these things end up being the reasons that systems sometimes use secure attention, even though the point should be one that's focused on community safety.
Adrienne Van Nice oversees the juvenile unit for the Boulder County District Attorney's Office. She says the county has made major innovations in its juvenile justice program. That includes limiting those held in secure detention. She says prior to the crisis, they had a cap of 11 beds.
Currently, our cap is 5, and we have held steady throughout the crisis at a pretty stable 3. And two of those individuals had been arrested on very serious gun-related charges. And one of those individuals was in custody awaiting a high-level treatment-related placement.
Many who've looked at the recent data say it poses more questions than answers. Why is juvenile detention going down right now? Who is not being detained? Is it based on race, based on the crime? Or is it strictly fear that incarcerated kids may get sick with COVID-19? And if that's the case, did they really need to be incarcerated? Van Nice believes the answer could be different for different states.
I think as a criminal justice system, we do tend to knee-jerk a bit in terms of leaning towards an incarcerative approach. It's the approach that we know. And again, it's the approach that we have the resources for, right? We have funding for jails. We have funding for detention centers in general, or historically we have. That trend is changing, and we don't have funding for programming on the streets. So if people can demonstrate, if the statistics demonstrate that there wasn't an increased risk to public safety, then I think that you may see more jurisdictions being more comfortable with approaches like this in the future.
About 2 million youth under age 18 are arrested in the United States each year. And nationwide, about 200,000 young people are admitted to detention facilities. Van Nuys says the reduced numbers during the crisis could be an opportunity to provide more support to organizations that are actually working with young people in the community and eliminate the overuse of secure detention centers, youth prisons, and other residential facilities.
In general, we probably have kids going through detention nationally who perhaps don't need to go through detention. But when I say don't need to go through detention, that also to a certain extent takes for granted the fact that there is a serious dearth of availability of programming and resources to address the needs of these kids. So if you are in a location where there are no resources to address the needs of these kids, which I think is a national epidemic, and I think, again, it's the same for juveniles as it is for adults. If you don't have the resources to provide these kids and these families, then you're not doing anything to interrupt the cycle, and this kid is coming back and back, and you may see an increase in risky behavior that poses a risk to this child and to others. So our focus is to try and figure out holistically what's going on with this juvenile, what's going on with this family system, and what can we do to intervene and break the cycle of delinquent behaviors?
For KGNU, I'm Roz Brown.
It is 15 minutes past 8 o'clock. Well, local researchers are looking at the physiology of how we age. And KGNU's Steve Miller volunteered himself as one of the research subjects. And he brings us this report.
The Integrative Physiology of Aging Laboratory at CU Boulder primarily focuses on their ongoing research on vascular aging. Some of the research is done on volunteer subjects, like myself. I happen to fit the criteria for two of the studies so far. I recently finished volunteering on a study using the oral supplement nicotinamide riboside, or also known as NR. I spoke with the postdoctoral fellow overseeing the study on NR, Dr. Daniel Craighead.
I was an exercise science major in undergrad back at Ithaca College, and the cardiovascular physiology courses were always my favorite. I went on to get a PhD in cardiovascular physiology at Penn State University, and then came out to the University of Colorado Boulder to do a postdoc for further training to be a researcher in cardiovascular physiology. So most of my research has focused on understanding how blood vessels function in health and disease. So we know that cardiovascular diseases are the number one cause of death in adult Americans. And a big reason why people develop cardiovascular disease is their blood vessels stop working as well. From grad school through now, I've been focusing on understanding those processes and reversing them. So at CU specifically, I've worked on two major studies. One where we're looking at an intervention called inspiratory muscle strength training, where people perform 30 inhalations against a high resistance per day through a handheld device. And the idea is that this might be a time-efficient form of physical training that can improve some markers of cardiovascular health. And then the other main study I've been involved in here is looking at supplementation with a compound called nicotinamide riboside, which is a compound your body naturally makes that goes down with aging, and we're trying to restore that as a way to improve cardiovascular health.
Talk about how a low-calorie diet could possibly extend our lifespan.
One way that scientists think we can extend our health span or our years of healthy, disease-free life is by decreasing caloric intake. It's harder to get people to calorically restrict because people like to eat, and older adults, there's some danger with caloric restriction, namely that they'll lose muscle mass and bone mass, which are already problems with aging, so we don't want to exacerbate those. One alternative idea has been to try to activate the same cellular pathways in your body that are activated with caloric restriction through supplementation with different compounds. Nicotinamide riboside is kind of working through this strategy. It is a precursor for an enzyme called the sirtuin family of enzymes. Normally, if you calorically restrict those sirtuin enzymes, they become much more active and lead to health benefits. So we think an alternative way to do this might be to increase nicotinamide riboside, which would then increase the activity of these sirtuins and make you healthier without having to calorically restrict. Your body naturally makes NR, but like I said before, it goes down as you age. So you take it as a supplement, your body absorbs it, and then it gets converted in your body to what's called NAD+. And that NAD+ then goes and increases the activity of those sirtuins.
Well, there was a pilot study done on NR, so let's talk about that and the results from it.
It was about 20 people. Originally, they studied mice and then had positive findings, so they translated that work to people. That pilot study was primarily done by Chris Martens, who was a former postdoctoral fellow in the laboratory, as well as Dr. Seals. Dr. Seals is the PI of our laboratory, so he's in charge of all the studies that we have going on. They did the smaller pilot study and saw some benefits that NR lowered blood pressure and made arteries less stiff. But that was a pretty small study and had a pretty short intervention period of only 6 weeks. We now are translating that to a much larger study where we'll recruit about 100 people and do a 3-month intervention.
How long will this study go on?
So we are a little over a year in, and this is a 5-year grant from the National Institutes of Health. So we have almost 4 years still to keep going on this project. So the volunteers have a 3-month supplementation period where they'll get a set of pills that they will take daily. Neither they nor us researchers will know if they're getting NR or a placebo. Our main outcome is we're looking at blood pressure. Blood pressure is a really significant risk factor for cardiovascular diseases. We measure blood pressure before and after the 3-month intervention. And then we also have some ways that we look at artery health. One of the main things that contributes to the health of your arteries is called endothelial function. And endothelial cells are the inner lining of your blood vessels. So we can do a test where we, for a brief period of time, block blood flow to your hand and arm by squeezing a cuff. And then when we release the pressure in that cuff, blood rushes back into your arm, and we can measure how much your brachial artery dilates or gets wider. And this dilation is dictated by the health of the endothelium. So the more your brachial artery dilates, the healthier your blood vessels are, and the less at risk of cardiovascular disease you are. And then we're also looking at how stiff your arteries are. So to do this, we use some pressure probes placed on the skin over some main arteries, and we look at how quickly the pressure waves following your heartbeat gets to those locations. Because the stiffer your arteries are, the faster pressure transfers. And having stiff arteries is not good, so we're hoping that we'll be able to make arteries less stiff. So the pilot study was 6 weeks long, and it showed some benefits. This study is twice as long, and we're hoping to see some further benefits in different biomarkers of cardiovascular health. If we see promising results here, really the next step would be to do a large-scale clinical trial looking at really serious outcomes like mortality and heart attacks to see the benefits. So we're kind of one step ahead of proving that it's something that can extend health span or decrease risk for cardiovascular events.
What is the criteria for a volunteer to participate in this study?
For this study, we are looking for adults who are age 50 and older who have systolic blood pressure, which is that top number when you get a blood pressure reading, that is above 120 millimeters mercury, so above normal, and who are not taking blood pressure medications.
I was a volunteer for the NR study, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Are you looking for more volunteers?
Yeah, we are always looking for volunteers. We have plenty of studies going on, so if you don't qualify for this study, there's a good chance you might qualify for one of the other studies that we have of different tests of ways to improve health with aging. So if anyone's interested in getting involved, our website, you'll be able to read about all the studies we have going on. And there's a way you can fill out a questionnaire right on our website to see if you qualify for study.
To volunteer or just to find out more information, Google Integrative Physiology of Aging Laboratory. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
Well, today is Giving Tuesday now, and it's a new global day of giving and unity that takes place on May 5th. And it's an emergency response to the unprecedented need caused by COVID-19. And over the past couple of days, we've been talking about some of the local nonprofits that have been impacted by the current pandemic, but who are also finding themselves now more than ever serving the community. Well, KGNU is one of those nonprofits that you can support during Giving Tuesday. Now, I spoke with KGNU's membership coordinator, Verity Matthews.
The community is searching for stability and consistency and connection in this unprecedented time. Folks are looking to us in particular to know that we are as dedicated as we ever have been to our mission, which of course is to educate and entertain and give voice to underrepresented groups across the Front Range. We're providing an essential service that doesn't get as much recognition because we are the news and we are the entertainment. So the work that we do with our programming and online and with other services is building strong communities and makes our community stronger, healthier, and safer. I also believe that KGNU listeners are more civically engaged, and without this radio station, certain people might not have access to resources that could quite literally save their lives.
And I know a big part of our effort around the pandemic is we've actually expanded our news offerings. We have now twice a day Spanish language headlines available online. We're really reaching out into the community to try to support other nonprofits as well and raise them up during this pandemic as well, albeit needing that listener member support and that support from the community as well.
Yeah, well, like you said, in the week since COVID-19 upended everybody's lives, we set up our staff members with in-home offices and studios for live broadcasting from home. Like you said, we've launched this new Spanish language news service on our website. And we've also managed to train dozens and dozens of our DJs and public affairs hosts to produce their shows from home, really for the benefit of our listeners and the broader community, which I think is who we're working to serve during, you know, this pandemic.
And I know, Verity, you're still very much hearing from listeners and listener members, and we're hearing so much appreciation for those efforts. And I think some people really understanding the huge effort it's taken to really make all of that content available. And so I know we're already hearing from listeners regarding that, but really today is that day we need to hear from listeners in a really tangible way.
Yeah, we do. Like every other person or business or organization, what have you, KGNU was forced to upend the way that we've always done things and come up with an entirely new model for broadcasting. And not shockingly, it's taken some pretty serious resources to make that pivot. We had to send our phone volunteers home halfway through our spring drive, and the upshot is we didn't get to where we would have liked to have as far as dollars raised for our operating budget. So like many other community media outlets and other community organizations, we were kind of left scrambling for the opportunity and focus to bridge that gap. And I think that's where Giving Tuesday now comes in.
So I know it's really easy for people. There's just a central place they can log on. And I know we have a lot of information at kgnu.org. But today is that day we are asking people to step into that space and really support all of those community institutions that are here regardless of what's going on and really doubling down in our efforts to support the community. So how can people really help out those nonprofits, but particularly KGNU?
It's really simple. You can go online to kgnu.org and just push a button and take 90 seconds to make a donation that will help us respond to this unbelievable need that's been generated by the COVID-19 crisis. This is a global funding initiative. We're all working with the folks from Giving Tuesday now to promote generosity and giving and unity and kindness on this one day of generosity and giving in the community.
It's KGNU's membership coordinator, Verity Matthews, speaking there with us about Giving Tuesday Now, your opportunity today to participate in a global day of giving and unity. It's taking place all day today, and it's an emergency response to the unprecedented need caused by COVID-19. You can find out more about how to help your local community radio station, kgnu.org, at our website, kgnu.org. Now, don't forget, some of our expanded offerings during this time include Spanish headlines available at our news website, news.kgnu.org, in the mornings and again in the afternoon. And you can find all of our coverage of the COVID-19 pandemic, our updates happening throughout the day. It's all online at our website, as well as links to information and resources. Just go online to kgnu.org. www.cjs.org. It is 8:28. Still lots more to come this morning. Coming up on How on Earth, our award-winning science show. It is our annual graduation special where KGNU's Jill Parker checks in with some research students at CU on some of their projects and some of their research. So we're going to hear more from them coming up in just about 4 or 5 minutes' time. Then at 9 o'clock, it is Alan Watts running out this morning's news and public affairs before Fergus brings us a great morning of music starting at 9:30 on the Morning Sound Alternative. Next, though, it is time for the comment line.
Hey, this is Diane calling from Denver. I just wanted to say, today's Wednesday, the 29th of April. I just wanted to tell everybody that if you didn't hear it this morning, you missed a great Morning Sound show with Uncle Jeff and Yukari. They played all instrumental music, and it was so wonderful. A lot of songs that I knew really well, but it was so good to hear just the music so you could appreciate the music without getting caught up in the words and what word comes next. Fantastic show. Do it again. Hope you heard it. Thanks a bunch. Bye.
And that is the comment line. The number to call, 303-447-9911. And we play the comment line on Tuesday mornings. Coming up this Thursday morning, just after 8:30, we'll have a live call-in show taking a look at dying and grief and mourning in the time of COVID-19. As patient care and healthcare systems have become more complicated, the business and ethics of end-of-life care have become more sophisticated and powerful. And we now have new skills and tools to help people with very different needs much earlier than the day of an actual terminal diagnosis. Now, the COVID-19 crisis is showing us that everything that we've learned in the last 20 years is going to help us move forward into the next 20. So as part of our ongoing series looking at death and dying and end-of-life issues, do tune in this Thursday morning just after 8:30, and your calls will be welcome.